Hello! This is episode number 3. Oh, we've already hit the big 3 of the Foodie Flashback. Food and memories, where we talk about food and the memories attached to that. My guest today is someone I'm very familiar with again. It's Jeff Gamet.
Reese, you have no idea how excited I am to be recording with you today. I'm not just saying that. I really am.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited too. Like, I mean, I basically put together like my top 3 favorite podcasters. And I was like, okay, let's do Doc, let's do Jeff, and let's do Ewan. And I all hit them within a week. It's amazing.
Well, that's... Actually, now the pressure's on, but I also feel like I'm in a very elite group. So wow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I really enjoy it. Like, I mean, we podcast together on both the Big Show and the Mech Show every week. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it feels like we never get to talk though. Like, I mean, it's always a bigger group. We always talk about tech and about news and all of that. And like, I mean, you're usually working, which also like you have to rush off to another meeting. So mm-hmm. I think this is a good chance to like talk about our food and like food memories and everything.
Yeah, I agree. And I was thinking about the last time we saw each other in person, and I realized it was several years ago at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I was bummed. Well, okay, I was very excited to get to spend time with you, but I was also disappointed. Pointed because where we were able to connect, it was at one of the parties, mm-hmm. and I kept getting pulled in all these different directions, and so the quality time I was really hoping to have with you, it didn't happen the way I was hoping for, but at the same time I was still so happy that we got to spend some in-person time together.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed that too. I think that was kind of random, if I remember that correctly. It was like I was walking down the street and you were, I think, at AltConf, and we just ran into each other. Like you and Chuck were standing outside and we were like, oh hey.
And we talked for a little bit.
Yeah,
and then I can't remember if we had coordinated to go to one of the parties together or if we just happened to connect there. But when we did, I was like, oh, this is great. We get to hang out more. And it was, you know, it was a conference party.
Yeah.
So,
usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was usual.
It's always super busy there. It's simply, I mean, there's so many people and so many people also, you know, I mean, you were there, Chuck was there, Kelly, like all the people I know, like we're all coming together at those parties. And we're like, okay, like you just get, as you said, you get pulled into different directions. I want to talk to you a little bit about like your background in food. Like, do you consider yourself a foodie?
When I use the term loosely, yes. And when I say using the term loosely, and it might simply because of where I live, the term foodie often ends up including this kind of arrogance to go along with it. Mm-hmm. And while I appreciate good food, I love a wide variety of foods, and I love getting to experience different foods and like different food environments and venues. Mm-hmm. I don't have this thing that goes along with it where it's like, oh well, this food isn't high enough on the scale to really be foodie food. So in that sense, no, I'm not a foodie, but in the rest of it, oh, totally. I love getting to experience new things and I love the small handful of restaurants that make just that one thing that I love and then treating myself and going out for those things. And I have America's Test Kitchen cookbook, like the first 17 years of episodes, which has all the recipes. That's in my kitchen.
Nice.
And it's not a cooking Bible for me. It's a collection of cooking guidelines because they've come up with amazing recipes. But I have a dairy allergy. So I look at what they've come up with, and then I think, okay, here's how I could do this and not have it kill me. And so, yes, I enjoy experimenting with food all the time.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, your approach to recipes, it's also like similar to mine. Like you simply, you take a recipe as a guideline, and then you make it your own. Like however you want to do it, however you want to change it, you do. Like you just say, okay, this is roughly the idea of what I want to do, and then you change it to your liking.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very interesting approach, because I've met like two groups of people. There are the people that take a recipe and then follow it to the letter, like no deviation. If it says stir it 10 times, they stir it exactly 10 times. And it sounds like we're more like the experimental area, where it's like, okay, let's see what we can do.
Yes. I pay attention to the ingredients that go into recipe. Mm-hmm. So, okay, for example, the Betty Crocker cookbook. I have all of the big name cookbooks because you kind of have to. The peanut butter cookie recipe in the Betty Crocker cookbook is great, except that it's like eating candy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I cut back on the granular sugar, mm-hmm. like half,
mm-hmm.
and then replaced part of what I took away from the granular sugar with extra brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So my cookies don't have as
less sweet.
Yeah, so it has less sugar overall, but a higher ratio of brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can't do butter because dairy, mm-hmm. so I just use vegetable shortening mm-hmm. for all of the fat.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I'll throw in like 70 or 80% dark chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Or cacao, dark chocolate chips. Mm-hmm. And then that's my cookie.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. Now I have to try
it. Yes. You totally have to do that.
No, that sounds amazing. So where does that like love for I mean also baking apparently, like for cooking and for baking, where does that come from? Like is that something you picked up as a kid, or is that like a later thing?
I think it started as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And this will sound horrible. It started as a kid because when I was growing up, so we'll say those elementary and middle school years, the things that we were eating at home, it was pretty standard and nothing very exciting. Both my parents were working full time, and so the things that my mom would prepare, it had to be fast, it had to be easy, and it also turned out that meant it had to be bland.
So was that more like the TV dinner kind of food, or did she cook, but like, yeah, it had to be fast?
There was definitely TV dinner things happening, but a lot of it was mom cooking, and it would be things where you'd think this would have tons of flavor, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be like, let's make a pork roast with vegetables.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
It does. And at the same time, it had nutritional value without bringing delight to your mouth. And so when I was old enough to really start experimenting some myself, then I just started making some things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would be good and sometimes it not. And sometimes it was making macaroni and cheese from a box and then getting sick because it has dairy in it. and learning, okay, now I understand why I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What other kinds of food did you make? Like, that's pretty impressive that as you said, like elementary school, middle school, that you already started cooking and experimenting.
Actually, one of the things that really triggered it for me, now that we're talking about about this and memories are coming back, in elementary school, there was some kids magazine that I got through the school. And it had a recipe in it for chocolate cake from scratch, you know, like, like, here's how much cocoa powder you need to use for it to be chocolate cake. And I read through this thing and I was absolutely fascinated by it.
What fascinated you about that?
Well, it's because it wasn't a box, I think. It's because for me, to that point, so much of the food that you would eat was something that started in a cardboard box. And then you'd add to it, and then it would miraculously turn into this other thing. But to look at it at the component elements, like eggs, flour, cocoa powder, you know, things like that, it was this very different thing and very novel for me. And so the whole idea of taking all of these elements and putting them together and crafting this finished product, which was ultimately a chocolate cake with homemade chocolate frosting, was absolutely fascinating to me. And to be able to watch the process as I was doing each thing and to see what was happening as the whole preparation progressed was so interesting. And then I put the cakes into the oven, and it smells like cake, which was amazing. And when everything came out, I had this beautiful cake
that you made all by yourself.
All by myself as an elementary school kid.
Wow.
And it was just this amazing thing for me.
It sounds also a little bit like almost a scientific approach to it. Like, I mean, as you said, like getting, like putting all the ingredients together and like seeing the process, like how things change and evolve, right?
Yes. Yes. To me, there's this very, I'll call it an emotional scientific element to cooking and baking, where now that I have years of experience making good things and bad things, you have to make some bad stuff to learn how to make the good stuff better. Just the whole thing of looking at different ingredients and in my mind being able to process what happens with these ingredients when they go together. And you know, and even down to I make a bison chili that I do in my slow cooker. Yes, I can do it in a pot on the stove, but if I do it in the slow cooker, I've got the amazing smell all day long.
And it tastes like five times better if it's slow cooked, right?
Yes. And so with like a bison chili, a standard broth or liquid add-in that you do is a beef broth, which to me makes no sense at all, because what you're doing is adding in to all these other flavors something that's very heavy. And can have a more overpowering flavor in what you're in what you're making.
Exactly. So
if you're going to use a broth, I feel like you should use a chicken broth or a vegetable stock, because it will be lighter and it'll let the other flavors of the chili come through.
Yeah, exactly.
But I use beer.
Wow. Okay. That is pretty cool.
And that was a game changer because it adds a richness without overpowering. Now I wouldn't do a full on stout because that I think probably would end up getting too heavy with the flavor, but like a red ale, I keep telling myself I want to do this with an Imperial IPA. And every time I go to do that, I just drink the Imperial IPA and put something else in.
keep following the old rule, like two glasses of whatever alcohol you have into the cook and one into the pot.
Exactly, because you need to make sure that you're using quality ingredients. Yeah. So anyhow, yes, the scientific thing, that's what led me to experimenting with things like putting beer in for the liquid instead of a vegetable stock or some other broth, and experimenting with things like when you saute vegetables with some wine.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried doing that with a whiskey instead?
I have. Well, not with a whiskey. I've tried it with there's a, I'm blanking on the name now. It's a French alcohol. I think apple based, I want to say. I'm just blanking on the name now. And I've cooked with that, and that was amazing. Like, there's actually a very traditional French dish, which is veal. And then it's basically flambéed and like with whatever the alcohol was. I said I'm blanking on the name right now. That is amazing.
I'm going to do some research. All right. So like if you don't have a grill available to you so that you can actually grill meat, pork chops in a skillet
mm-hmm.
with fresh mushrooms
mm-hmm.
and some whiskey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Oh.
Now I'm hungry. I want to do that.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's like, I mean, alcohol is also something very, like, that's something you have to experiment with. Like, very few recipes have it, like, by default. But mm-hmm. once you get into it, and like, you, I mean, that's something like professional chefs do actually quite a lot. Like, they'll finish off like a sauce with a little bit of alcohol and just flambé it or whatever, or like a dessert oftentimes. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't even think about. I mean, minus the wine maybe no. that you can put in like a sauce. Most people don't even like think about like, okay, like adding beer, as you said, like to a chili.
It's a game changer.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I remember it was in my head and gone, and now it's back. Have you ever experienced someone cooking with wine where they use like some really crappy wine?
Well, yeah, my dad used to do that.
And okay, so I'm not the only person that's experienced that, and I've asked people, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. And their answer is, well, the alcohol is going to cook off anyhow. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
yeah.
But that's not the point. The point is you're trying to enhance the flavor with something good. If you won't drink it yourself, why would you put it in the food?
Exactly. Like, I mean,
and I've had a couple people look at me like they just had an epiphany.
Yeah.
And then I've had other people look at me like, I don't even understand the words coming out of your mouth. I put the cheap crap in the food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how it works.
Exactly.
So no, disappointing.
I mean, it totally is. I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, why would you do that? Like, I mean, all you get, like, when the alcohol is gone, all you have left then is crappy taste. Like, I mean, why would you do that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I definitely hear a lot of experimenting going on also, like, in your childhood. Were there any, like, did you cook with other family members, or was it all you? Like, were you alone in the kitchen? Would you send out your family and say, like, let me do this?
It was me.
It was just you?
It was just me.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it wasn't like the rest of my family had no interest mm-hmm. in cooking or what I was doing. It was just, they could tell that I was really into what I was doing. So give me the space to do my thing, mm-hmm. which was great. And yeah, and I would experiment all the time. What I would do back then was follow the recipe strictly
mm-hmm.
because I didn't understand enough to experiment. So yeah, so I remember finding a recipe in a magazine once, and it was, I don't know what it was. It was some I'll do air quotes, Chinese mm-hmm. dish.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It was probably something like a chicken with rice thing with soy sauce, and now it's called a Chinese dish or something.
Because it has soy sauce, it's Chinese, yeah.
Right. And but I remember making this thing. It had vegetables and stuff, and And I'm sorry, I'm vague, but I really can't remember it that well. Mm-hmm. But I remember this is something I would do. I would go through magazines and books and find things that looked different mm-hmm. and interesting, and then I would want to make them. Mm-hmm. And I really believe a lot of that came from the fact that my parents were just so busy that coming up with interesting meals on a regular basis, I mean, that wasn't going to happen. So I started exploring and found things like that.
I mean, what do you think, or where do you think that interest in cooking came from? I mean, you said like the experimenting, all of that was fun. Like it was a thing that you had to do kind of. Was there any like role model or anything like that someone you saw, like I said, either family member or someone else, really like, hey, this sounds like something I want to do?
Probably the closest I would have to a role model to inspire me into cooking, and I am stretching this a little bit, would be my grandma, so my dad's mom. Mm-hmm. And that comes from when my sister and I, and so this would be before my little brother was born. So when my sister and I would go back to Iowa for a couple weeks in the summer mm-hmm. to spend time with my grandma and grandpa on their farm, like a literal farm. Nice. We would go out to the big garden mm-hmm. that was right next to the house mm-hmm. and help grandma pick beans and peas and carrots or whatever. Grandpa, he would bring the corn because a big chunk of the land was corn. Mm-hmm. So grandma didn't have to grow any corn in her own little garden because, mm-hmm. you know, grandpa, he'd go out and pick out the right corn for us. And then we would help grandma prepare the meals. Mm-hmm. And she would explain what she was doing, mm-hmm. which was great because it wasn't just, okay, give me this. I need you to stir this. Mm-hmm. She would actually tell us, I need you to get the salt. I need the baking powder. I go grab the celery. Okay, chop it like this because this is what we're doing with it. Mm-hmm. So she was explaining to us mm-hmm. the what, the how, and the why, mm-hmm. and that was great.
Yeah, it also sounds a little bit, I mean, how you're explaining it, it's, I mean, maybe it's just how you picked it up, but it sounds a little bit also very scientific. Like, again, like not just saying, okay, throw the salt in there. It's saying, okay, no, this is what the salt does. Like, very yes. methodical approach.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that my grandma's example led to the way that I do cook now, where I play fast and loose with the recipes mm-hmm. and will oftentimes go to the grocery store not knowing what I'm going to be preparing for dinner. And I just look through the produce and find things that look good to me today. Mm-hmm. Maybe go over to the meat counter and pick out something that looks good to me today. Mm-hmm. And when I get home, I have all these ingredients mm-hmm. and now I have a puzzle and I figure out how that goes together into my dinner.
Yeah, I do that too, actually. That's something I picked up from I think my uncle. Like, I mean, we have a dish that we literally, I mean, when you talked about like Chinese in air quotes, I was thinking about that dish because it's not probably not really Chinese. It might be Chinese like adjacent, but it's literally
inspired.
Yeah. It's like we literally buy whatever vegetables and whatever meats we just like and we just see, and then we come back home and then we get together and we're like, okay, what are we gonna do? And we do like two or three dishes sometimes. And we just chop everything and cook it, mm-hmm. and it ends up somehow great. Like, we still don't yes. know to this day. I mean, I've been doing this with my uncle for like 20, 30 years. I still don't know how we do it. But it's exactly yeah. that. Like, I mean, you just go out and get inspired by what's out there, what's fresh, what does look good. Like, what are right. you up for? Like, what are you? I mean, I talked to you in last episode about that. It's a little bit, it's also mood. Like, you you look at it and like, okay, what am I feeling today?
Yes. Right. Yes. I mean, it can even be down to color.
Mm-hmm.
Walking past, say, where the bell peppers are.
Mm-hmm.
Am I in a green mood? I'm in a red mood. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I'm in an orange mood today.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's totally different on a different day. Like you walk past it and like, oh, okay, today I'm green. And you pick that. Like, or today I'm not in the mood for bell peppers at all. Like it happens. So it's really fascinating to see that, like in also in other people, that like it's mood based, and a lot of like memories are, or like feelings and memories are wrapped up in our food. So that's the fascinating thing that I want to explore really. So you started cooking as we had like elementary school, middle school. I'm guessing that. That continued from there on. Did it like? I mean, you got more and more interested in it. Did it go back, or was there a time where you didn't cook as much, or was that like a constant in your life since then?
I'd say it's been a constant. The way I cook,
mm-hmm.
that depending on just the rest of life circumstances, mm-hmm. that has varied mm-hmm. over time.
In what sense, like?
In the sense of style, mm-hmm. let's say, or equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So, like when you live in a small apartment,
mm-hmm.
you develop an ability to do what I call single skillet cooking.
Yep.
Because yeah. you just don't have the space to have like a mm-hmm. bunch of different pots or skillets out, mm-hmm. And so learning how to do single skillet cooking has actually served me really well.
Oh, I can imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I figured out how to just by doing it so much, how to create some really interesting meals
mm-hmm.
where I have minimal impact on my cleanup time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. I mean, that's almost an essential skill for any parent because, I mean, you don't have that time or energy sometimes to clean up, like have a big cleanup after. So single skillet, even if you have the space, is sometimes really important because like you all you need is like 2 minutes to clean everything and then you can go back to whatever mess is happening
right.
to the children right now.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the big changer for me. No, a changer is a bad word for that. The big shift for me in cooking
mm-hmm.
was when I got a grill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then learned how to use a grill because most people don't know how to properly grill. And so they basically turn their grill into a kiln.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. everything that goes in just gets scorched and ruined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I remembered
mm-hmm.
growing up was you would get a hot dog or a bratwurst or whatever off of a grill. And it was basically this carbonized outer layer.
Yeah, so true.
and it just wasn't that good. But then the first time I went to an event where they were grilling bratwurst
mm-hmm.
and got a bratwurst and ate it, I had an epiphany, which was, this is what it should taste like.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I can actually eat. This is what I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a grill, and then I went out and bought the Kansas City Barbecue Society cookbook
mm-hmm.
to learn how to actually use my grill.
Yeah.
And it changed the way I cook to the point where the stove in the house, I wasn't using hardly at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I would cook year round on my grill on the back porch.
Well, which is even more impressive if you think about like, I mean, the winters in Colorado are crazy. So doing that.
Yes, there were times where I had to dig the grill out from the snow so that I could cook, but it was great. And where I live now, having a grill is just simply not an option because there is no place for me to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on Amazon and I found a little countertop electric grill. Mm-hmm. So not like the George Foreman thing, but like it's an actual grill with a lid that closes. And mm-hmm. and so now when I went to grill meat, mm-hmm. I put this thing on the counter, I plug it in, and I grill meat, and holy crap, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, is it the same? Probably not, right? But it's a different skill, but it's not less, like, it's not a lesser thing. It's simply different, right?
It's a different thing. Yeah. I mean, the big difference is that I can't do the thing that I would do before, where I had a cast iron smoke box. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is take different types of wood, depending on what it was that I was going to be barbecuing. Mm-hmm. And then I would take that wood and I would soak it for a couple of days in apple juice, mm-hmm. not water, apple juice. Okay. And so then you have this wood that's saturated. Mm-hmm. You put it into your little grill smoke box and it goes on the grill on the opposite end from where the meat is. Mm-hmm. And so as it heats, the wood isn't going to catch on fire because it's so saturated, but it smokes out, and it smokes out with the wood flavor and the apple juice. Mm-hmm. And that's not something I can do now.
Yeah, that's a little bit difficult. I mean, you could probably do something with apple juice. I could definitely imagine that, but like smoking is a little bit difficult, I want to say.
Smoking's difficult. Actually, here is the fix for doing just the apple juice. Mm-hmm. Take a soda pop or beer can and cut it off so you have like 3-inch tall mm-hmm. aluminum bowl now. Mm-hmm. Put whatever liquid you want into that and you can set it on there. Mm-hmm. And
it just evaporates.
That'll totally work. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm, that sounds amazing. I think I have to try that. That sounds great. That's a good idea. So the dish you or the dish kind of that you want to talk about, the food you want to talk about today that you told me already about is
deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs.
Such a simple thing, but this comes from my grandma. Mm-hmm. And she knew how much my sister and I loved, well, and then ultimately my brother when he joined the scene too. She knew how much we loved her deviled eggs. So every time we would come visit, when we got there, there was already a tray of deviled eggs ready and out. Mm-hmm. And so I've always had this place in my heart for deviled eggs because of that. And the sad thing is I can't exactly replicate my grandma's deviled eggs because she made them exactly the way that you know we cook now, which is, or you and I are cooking now, which is this looks like about the right amount.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, yep.
So how much mayonnaise and how much mustard goes in, mm-hmm. You know, and there's vinegar. Mm-hmm. So what's the right amount of vinegar to put in there?
It's like,
and when grandma would make the deviled eggs and we would watch her make the deviled eggs and she'd say, okay. And so here's how much mayonnaise you put in. That looks about right. Mm-hmm. And here's how much mustard you put in. Okay. That looks about right. And she's just using a kitchen spoon, mm-hmm. not a measuring spoon. Mm-hmm. And like a soup spoon. Mm-hmm. And she's just scooping stuff up and putting it in this bowl and she mixes it all up. And it's done. And then she pulls out the paprika, shakes some of that on top, and that's it.
Yeah.
And they were magical every single time.
That's the funny thing about those grandma recipes. I mean, probably even like any recipe that any like non-chef, well, probably any recipe. I mean, that's why it probably works that we don't follow it. It's not about the recipe. I mean, if you asked your grandma back then to write it down, she would have written it down. And there would have been some measurement, but it was the mistakes sometimes even that she made, where it's like, oh, a little bit too much of this or that she didn't mm-hmm. probably even realize that it was like in air quotes a mistake that she made that made it actually work or made it different or special. Like it's not the perfection of the recipe, it's the mistakes that make it actually go.
Yes. Yes. And And she'd been making deviled eggs a lot longer than I'd been alive.
True, true. So,
and they were just magical.
Yeah. So, did you try to replicate them? I'm guessing yes.
I have tried to replicate them. Mm-hmm. And I have a recipe that I got off the internet years ago. Mm-hmm. And then I made a little, just a few modifications to it. It's, you know, just ratios. Mm-hmm. Because deviled eggs are that simple. Mm-hmm. Start with a hard-boiled egg, and then you mix up the yolk with mayonnaise, mustard, a little bit of salt, and a little bit of vinegar. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Store-bought mayonnaise or homemade?
I've never made my own mayonnaise.
Should. It's a totally different ballgame.
I know.
Super easy. I know. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm like, why would anybody buy this? Like, it's super cheap to make, and it's so different. And it all it takes is like eggs, a little bit of mustard, like a little bit of like a citrus, like lemon, mm-hmm. and oil. And a mixer, and it's all you need. It's super easy. I mean, it's, as I said, it's one of those things. I'm always like, I mean, why would you buy this? It's not even close to the real thing.
You know, I can't argue with you on this. I am totally aware that I need to try making my own mayonnaise.
You should try.
And I know that I have everything in my kitchen right now to make mayonnaise.
That's a cool thing. Like, I mean, if you have a even reasonably stocked kitchen, you can always make mayonnaise. I mean, it's honestly, that's for me like a little bit of a go-to if I don't know, like if I'm missing something, I'm like, let's make a mayonnaise for it. Like, I don't know. I have like some kind of corn salad that I made, and I'm like vinaigrette wise, I'm like struggling. I'm like, okay, let's make a curry mayonnaise with it. Like, it's always a good fallback.
Yeah, you know, the fact that you went right to a curry mayonnaise is awesome, because the idea of using mayonnaise as a base and then building flavor out from that is so awesome, and so few people think about doing that. But I mean, I feel like an animal now. I'll scoop mayonnaise out of the jar into a bowl, and then I will add other things to it, and make whatever it is that I want, and the mayonnaise just happens to be the base.
Yeah, which works. But the cool thing about the homemade mayonnaise is that it's good in it on its own. Like, I mean, I said curry mayonnaise because that's like usually I like that curry corn combination so much that I do that. But I mean, literally, whenever I make mayonnaise, I have to like I usually make twice the amount that I need, because half of it I'm just gonna eat right away. It's just that good.
Yeah. I've had some really good mayonnaise before that. In retrospect, yeah, it had to have been homemade. Mm-hmm. And it's a completely different thing.
Mm-hmm. It is. Like, I mean, it's not even the same. Like, it's not even the same universe. It's a completely different ballgame. So definitely you will have to do that and report back in like 1 year.
I will do that. It's okay. Actually, now that you've inspired me, so with a dairy allergy, doing a grilled cheese sandwich is a different thing.
Yep.
So my grilled cheese sandwich, I make my own bread because that's how I ensure that it doesn't have anything in it that's potential health trigger for me. So sure. I know there's no dairy in it. So I start by making my own bread, and then I do a mix of a couple different like sheep and goat cheeses shredded.
Yep.
I put mayonnaise in there to add like a little bit of contrasting flavor to go with the cheese.
Yeah.
So it goes on the inside. I've heard a thing where people put mayonnaise on the outside. Why? And it's like, yeah, that's just wrong. But then, what I use as the browning agent is olive oil in the skillet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that adds some extra flavor.
And I'm not going to lie. This isn't a brag. This is simply a fact. I make a killer grilled cheese sandwich. So now I need to do that and make the mayonnaise that goes on it. And I have a feeling that my grilled cheese sandwich game is about to get kicked up several notches.
Yes, I bet. And all it takes you is another, whatever, a minute. Because mayonnaise is literally, I mean, throw everything together in like a mixer, turn it up, mm-hmm. throw in the oil, done. Like it doesn't even take that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the cleanup after is kind of the biggest part of the process. Like that's all.
Yeah, but if you're doing the cleanup along the way, mm-hmm. it's not that bad.
Yeah, that's another thing I learned that I picked up probably from my uncle, who was like more like leaning towards like a professional chef, even though he never even worked in that profession. That's something I learned from him. Like, I mean, always keeping the kitchen clean, always like removing everything right away. It's definitely less work if you do that.
Yes. Yeah, that's my routine, especially because the place I'm in now, the kitchen is small enough. There's no room for a dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, so, yes, it does. But it also gives me incentive to make sure that I'm keeping everything clean all the time. So you're cooking and you have that window of a couple minutes where whatever in the skillet or the pot or whatever, it needs to sit there and simmer brown. Okay, now I wash the stuff I don't need anymore, mm-hmm. and that goes away, and I'm back to working on the food, mm-hmm. and you know it's just like this cycle. And by the time you're done, sure, there's going to be a couple things left over,
yeah.
that still need to be cleaned, but that happens after you eat.
Yeah, and I mean that also means that the one skillet cooking skills that you honed like years ago that they come in handy now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean less cleanup if you don't have a dishwasher with only one skillet. Yeah.
Yep.
That's amazing. Okay, I want to circle back to the deviled eggs real quick.
Okay.
I'm super curious. I mean, you said you've made them yourself. Do they? I mean, are you happy with them? Do they compare, or is there like an element where you're like, yeah? It's still not the same.
I like my deviled eggs. I do make good deviled eggs. One thing that I definitely do different from my grandma, because she would start by boiling her eggs. Mm-hmm. I take a muffin tray, mm-hmm. a 12 muffin tray, mm-hmm. fill it up with a dozen eggs and put it in the oven, and I bake the eggs instead. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's very interesting. Which
is a great way to do hard-boiled eggs, even though I know technically it's not actually a hard-boiled egg.
Hard-boiled.
It's just boiled in the shell. And it's great. It's like, what is it? It's like 325 for 30 minutes, I think that's it. It's either 325 or 350. Mm-hmm. And you know, you do the eggs in the oven, come out, they go into a big bowl of ice water, mm-hmm. for 10 minutes, and now you can peel them. Mm-hmm. And so I start differently than my grandma did. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it, I'm doing what she did based on this you know, just a very standard recipe. Mm-hmm. And they come out really good. Mm-hmm. They're not my grandma's eggs.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Is it like the memories or the feelings that are attached to it?
That's a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
I mean, those were grandma's eggs. Mm-hmm. The only person that can make grandma's eggs, mm-hmm. is grandma.
That's so true.
Yeah. And since she's not here to make them anymore, that means this is something that will never be part of this world again.
Mm-hmm.
So I miss her eggs,
mm-hmm.
and I miss the flavor of her eggs. And honestly, if I was able to go back in time and set one of my eggs now next to one of hers, mm-hmm. as a kid, I probably wouldn't know the difference,
mm-hmm.
because they're deviled eggs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, grandma's deviled eggs will always be the best, and I will never reach that level of deviled egg mastery.
Oh, I bet you will. Like, give it another, whatever, 10, 20 years. Then you will, like, you will be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe my nieces will be on a show, mm-hmm. in like 20 or 30 years. And oh my God, Uncle Jeffy's deviled eggs. I can never make them the way he did.
Exactly. No, that's definitely something I've heard. And it's also funny that it's, in most cases, it's always grandma. Like, yes. I think it might be a generational thing to some extent. I mean, like, let's face it, there was a time where a lot of women worked in the kitchen still, or predominantly worked in the kitchen. But I think it's also it comes from a time where, like, I mean, whenever let's face it, your parents were fed up with you, they would send you to grandma.
Right. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. But growing up, my parents said, you love getting to spend time with your grandparents. So we're going to send you out for 2 weeks in the summer. So you get to have that time with grandma, grandpa. They're not lying.
No.
But at the same time, they're not telling us the rest of it, which is we're sending you off to a place you like for 2 weeks to get you away from us.
Exactly. Doesn't mean that they love you less. It just means that they're happy that you're happy somewhere else that they can spend some time on their own.
Right. Yeah. And it was important for mom and dad to have that, mm-hmm. that time just for them. And it allowed me to have these memories and experiences mm-hmm. that I otherwise wouldn't have had. And sadly, other people that I knew, other kids that I knew at the time, they never got to have those experiences mm-hmm. because their grandparents were already gone, or they just didn't get to have that kind of experience like I did.
Yeah, didn't have the time, they were sick, whatever. Like, I mean, that's definitely true. Like, not everybody got to do that, which makes it even, I think, more special that we did. I said, it's just like an observation to, like, wherever I talk to, it's so often it's grandma. Like, the first food-related memories are so often doing something with grandma or having some food at grandma's. It's mm-hmm. it's really interesting. I think it has a lot to do with the, as you said, like, this special time also. I think that adds to that, like, that it's not every day that you get to go over and, like, do something with it. It's like right. a weekend or like a summer vacation or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I got introduced to Southwest Tex-Mex style food. Mm-hmm. Because the idea of tacos or burritos, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, very, I'll call it mundane Southwest American food.
Yeah.
Because that's fast food now too. Okay. That's not something that I got to experience at home for whatever reason. I don't know if it's, that just wasn't my parents' thing or whatever, but my grandparents, they at one point started spending their winters in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And so sister and my brother and I, we would go and spend time down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And so grandpa introduced us to burritos and tacos. And the one that was like the pinnacle for me was the chimichanga.
Oh, yes. That's amazing.
And yeah, and it was like this life-changing experience. And then I'd come home, and not only were there no chimichangas in, at least anywhere that I could find in Colorado at the time, but the idea of getting to go and have a burrito somewhere,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't know where back then where you would find tortillas mm-hmm. unless you knew to go to like an ethnic grocery store in another part of town. And since I couldn't drive, I was just a kid. Well, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. You had to know someone who knows someone to even know where to go.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Funny thing, that's still the case in Arizona. I mean, you can get like tacos and burritos and everything everywhere, but like knowing where to go to get good tortillas is like a special thing. Like, you have to figure that out. Took me a while.
Yes.
Took me a little
yeah, oh, time. I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's an amazing bakery in Phoenix. So, highly recommended.
I've had some wonderful dining experiences in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And Tucson.
Definitely, yes. All right. I think we're at the end of the episode. Anything you want to share? Anything left?
No.
No.
And I say no, and I'm about to continue on. This is just so cool. I mean, having this whole discussion about food like this, this is so cool. Patrice, I am so glad you decided this needed to be a show, because you're right. This needs to be a show.
Absolutely. And those stories need to be out there. I think that's the important thing. Like the love, I mean, especially in these times, but I think in general, the love for food, like whether you're foodie or not, whether you can cook or not, doesn't matter. Everybody, to some extent, has a story and has a love for some food. I mean, even people, I mean, we're going to see. Like, I had Ewan on, who definitely said he loves eating, but he's not a foodie. Never been. Like, he can cook. I mean, he said he's okay. I've had his food. He's good. But he doesn't care to that level on it. But he still had plenty of stories to tell and plenty of like really interesting memories to share. I think that has to be out there, because
it does.
Like nobody ever talks about that.
It's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Food and dining, it's not just a necessary element of survival. It's a community thing.
Yeah, and it's also not a business, or it's not a like high and mighty and everybody has to be perfect thing. I mean, there's so much surrounding the food itself. I mean, yeah, we talked about deviled eggs and like your chocolate cake and whatever. But there was so much around that was interesting. It wasn't about like, okay, this is how you make the perfect chocolate cake, or this is how you make the perfect dairy-free grilled cheese. That wasn't about that. It was about, okay, like I had to figure out how to do these things, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super happy.
And then having those family memories that go along with learning and developing these skills. Mm-hmm. And my guess is that if I hadn't, as a child, been in my grandma's kitchen on the farm, watching her say, that looks about right, that I probably wouldn't have been comfortable moving beyond the follow a recipe step by step, as I did when I was a kid, to the place where a recipe became a starting point for whatever culinary magical creation was going to come out of the kitchen this time.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm just thinking about my own like upbringing, and my dad, I mean, he wasn't a good cook, I would say, but he loved to experiment. And that's one of the things I probably picked up from him. I was like, okay, I mean, skill-wise, I think I was a little bit better than him, but like I'm not afraid to try something, and if it goes wrong, I mean, it goes wrong. Like that's okay. Like not everything is perfect. I mean, ask any professional chef when they, like how they come up with a new whatever, a new recipe, new version of deviled eggs. They will tell you they've done like 100 things that didn't work, and 100 things that were disgusting, and that they tried and then simply said, okay, yeah, that wasn't it. Next, there was something just a little thing off, like it wasn't good enough yet. Where they were like, okay, let's do a little bit more of this. Like, again, a little bit more of a scientific approach, really. Think about it.
Yeah. And then once they've learned from all of those mistakes, I suppose you could call them those enhanced learning events.
Yep.
What they ultimately come up with is so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. This was so much fun. I really enjoyed talking to you, as I knew it would be.
This is awesome.
Yeah, we have to definitely do that again. I'll probably have you back. And there's some things I want to dive deeper into. We basically probably just scratched the surface, like all the years between like cooking, like middle school and whatever, and now I feel there's more. We'll definitely have to do that again at some point.
That's true. We didn't even get anywhere near my experimenting with Cajun food.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna write that down, and we're gonna go back to that at some point.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Tell the people where they can find you.
I am easy to find. Just do a Google search. I'm laughing only because it's funny how I've been on so many different podcasts. If you Google me, you will find me on tons of different podcasts.
Little Planet.
Yes, I'm the Text Expander evangelist for Text Expander. So I'm at textexpander.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gam at both places. And I've been told I need to remember to post more pictures of the things that I'm cooking. Yes. So I promise I will try to be better about that.
Yes, you do. I definitely want to see that.
Yeah. All right. I will do my best to remember to post more pictures of the stuff that I'm making.
Yeah. We definitely want to see you make the deviled eggs with the deviled eggs with your own mayonnaise and the grilled cheese.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll guess I'm going to go make some mayonnaise.
Good. Awesome. You can find me all over the internet, everything I do on thepatrice.com. And you can find this very podcast on Twitter at foodieflashback and also foodieflashback.com. And if you're interested and you have a story to tell, foodie or not, you want to talk to me, then please reach out either through Twitter, or there's also a form on foodieflashback.com where you can put in some info, and then I'll be in touch and we'll set something up. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Jeff, for being here. It was awesome. And talk to you soon.